This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. I am very excited about today's podcast episode because we have a guest that we are going to say has a couple of different titles, but she has done way more than that.
Ooh, this sounds intriguing. What question are we answering today?
How do we study pollution in the oceans?
How do we study pollution in the ocean? This sounds really interesting. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
We have the exact right guest to answer this question and help solve this problem today. We have Dr. Padma Venkatraman, who is an oceanographer turned author.
Yeah, and she is amazing. Welcome to the show, Dr. Padma.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, this is great. And I know you as an amazing author, as I'm sure lots of our listeners do, but I'm excited because we get to talk about your job as a scientist before you became an author. And many people may not know that. So let's start out with, what kind of scientist are you? What did you study?
So I studied oceanography, which means I studied the oceans in general. And there are lots of different kinds of oceanographers. So some of us specialize in the geology of the oceans. So that's like studying the landforms under the ocean, for instance, and so on, right? So lots of kids probably do know this. So again, maybe you do know this, but the largest mountains and the biggest valleys on our Earth are actually underwater, right? So it is so cool when you think about that. And so much of our Earth's surface is covered by water. So people have studied that, the structure under the ocean, if you will, are, you know, basically the geologists, right? Also, geologists also will study like coastlines and ocean currents and so on. So then there are physical oceanographers who study the physics of the ocean, which means like basically currents, everybody's but ocean currents, so how they move, waves, that kind of thing. And then we have chemical ocean, well, start with biological. We have biological oceanographers who study, obviously, the creatures under the ocean.
Right.
And then we have the chemical oceanographer.
I love chemistry. I was a chemistry major.
Yes. And we are the phenomenal geeks who study, among other things, all that's in the water that you can't see that is chemical. So, you know, it could be stuff that is natural, but it could also be pollution. And specialized in pollution.
Okay, so what about pollution? Why did you specialize in that?
So when I was growing up, I grew up in India, and I could already, when I was young, start to see the way that people were just using things and throwing them away. So when I was really little, when I was about, I don't know, 8, 9, I was already kind of attuned to this whole, you know, the way that we were treating the earth with so much contempt. And I remember my aunt was thrilled because she went to a grocery store and they gave her a plastic bag. And she said, I don't need to do this. And I remember telling her, listen, if you start like this, just think about 1 billion people in India getting disposable plastic bags to do stuff, right? And sure, it's not the whole billion, but still. And then she was like, and she never listened to me. And now when I go back to India and I look at the beach where I used to play as a kid, of course, I'm American now, but, you know, India is still someplace that I have a big attachment to and it's a huge place in my heart.
Right.
I go back and the beach has more plastic than it got sand.
Oh, no.
Ah.
That's not cool. And then, tell us, you see the plastic. So Dr. Padma, how does that, to just educate some of us, how does that turn into the chemicals in the ocean? Because I'm assuming that's where you're going with this, right?
Among other things. So I have to first say, you said you were going to say, that's so cool. Instead of which, on this show, we said, that's not so cool.
Oh, and I'm, very good. Yes.
Not I am so cool. Betting that we're going to be saying that a lot.
Yes.
Because, yeah, when you talk about pollution, most of it is so horrible, right? And plastic is one of the many things that pollutes the ocean. So if you have plastic floating around, now, a lot of the plastic that we see does break into smaller bits. Mm-hmm. And we call them microplastics now, or nanoplastics, which are really, really tiny pieces of plastic, but they still hang around for a very long time. So one of the things that they can do is get, obviously, they don't stay on land, right? Nothing really does stay on in one compartment on the earth, whether it's water or land or the land or atmosphere. So one of the things that I actually studied was how these three, basically the land, water, and atmosphere interact and what happens to pollutants. So if we have a pollutant, where does it go? Now with plastics, obviously plastic bags and things can be eaten straight on by something like a turtle.
Yes.
And then just sit in the stomach and basically kill the turtle, right? Plastic can wind itself, if it's not yet broken, can wind itself around the necks of things like seals and strangle them to death.
Yes.
But it can is so not cool. And it can also, when it's really small, get into fish, some small fish and then larger fish. And if it does that, it can affect their health. So plastic is only one kind, obviously, of pollution. I can tell you about lots of other kinds of not so pollution.
Right? Well, so what are the chemicals? What are the chemicals in there that you're talking about that,
so
that
one
are
of the
pollutants?
Sure. So there's so many different kinds of chemicals. I looked at anthropogenic organic pollutants, which means chemicals that are made by human beings that are basically, you can think of them as chemicals that are not metals. So sometimes we have metals that get into the water and pollute the water, right? So, and they can, you know, seafood has often has a lot of metals in it.
Right.
Whales can have, you know, heavy metal in them as well, and so on, because they eat smaller stuff. And many of these chemicals, including the organic pollutants that are not metals, what happens is that as you go up the food chain, they bioaccumulate, which means they get, it sort of magnifies. So if you have plankton, which are really tiny, right? And phytoplankton, which are like plants in the ocean that you can't really, really small plants. Then you have zooplankton, which are little animals that eat the small plants. And then you have little fish that eat the zooplankton. You have big fish eating the little fish. Then you have the humongous, I don't know, let's say marine mammals, right? Eating the large fish. Each step of that ladder, you will have more and more accumulation of these pollutants.
Oh, that doesn't sound good either.
Nope, not cool.
So you were right on the money that there's a lot that there's not cool.
Absolutely.
Okay, so in your study of pollution with oceanography, what are some of the best ways that we can resolve that problem? Is it all human activity?
So what I studied was all human activity. And
okay.
When I think of pollution, there are things that can happen in the ocean that may not be tied directly to human activity that can be not so good, but small things, right? Pollution for me, when I think of it, is always human activity. So we add so many different things to the water and we make it dirty in so many different ways, right? The soaps, the detergents we use that find their way into the oceans or lakes and water bodies. Let me just say water bodies, right? Stuff that even when we, I don't know, when we add fertilizer to our lawns, that can get washed away by the rain and then end up in the, you know, water bodies again and ultimately then potentially in the ocean. So there's like so many things, pesticides. So if you spray something on your lawn, which unfortunately people do, right?
Yes.
Because of the silliness and the silly obsession that we have, not coal with green grass.
I agree.
I'm like, that is such a silly thing to do.
Oh my gosh, I agree.
So I hope your listeners, when they grow up, are not going to waste their money and pollute like anything, wanting to grow green grass, people. That does not feed anyone. And if you're going to add pollutants to it, that is really not cool.
No.
I think instead you can just grow stuff that grows naturally, right? Native plants, eat what you grow from the garden, and don't waste it all on these silly lawns.
Yes. I agree. So, okay. So your question was, how do we study pollution in the ocean? So can you tell us a little bit about some of the tests or what you did as a scientist to detect all the pollution?
Sure. So many of the things that we do is we take samples. Okay. So we go out, the coolest thing probably that I did. We have to get at least one cool in there. So,
okay, good.
Yeah. So I worked on ships where I was sometimes the boss.
Oh,
and
yay.
We go off.
That's cool.
Yes. And we go off in the middle of the ocean. There's so many middles of so many oceans. But let's say we get out at sea and then we would take samples. So there are ways that you can sample the air with like an air filter.
Okay.
And look at what there is in the air. You can collect water. You can pump water through something and see what there is in the water. You can collect water samples, right?
Right.
And see what there is in it. And you can also, if you want to, depending how you where you are and how deep things are and so on, and you know, pretty much now they have ways to core it into the middle of the ocean, which I did not do. But you can in shallow water bodies, so in like estuaries, which are places where the you know ocean meets the river, you can take cores of sediment, which means you can actually take samples of sediment. So you'll know what's in the sediment. And sediment is just basically mud that's under the
right.
So you take all of those things, and of course, you can also sample fish, right? So you can take fish, you can sample what's in different, every level of the food chain, you could potentially find ways to look at what's going on. And then basically, we would take them, we would extract the pollutants out of them, out of these samples. Okay, so we'd do things in the lab that would basically take, let's say the mud or the whale, which is probably the most exciting for your listeners. I've worked with whales in test tubes because by the time I saw them, they were just a sample of the whale blubber in a test tube. So the fat of the whale, where the pollutants sit. And you would take that and you would shake it up with chemicals and you would pull the pollutants into those other solvents.
Right.
And you would take those solvents and concentrate them, and then you would shoot them, as we say, onto this machine that would then look at what was in that purified solvent. So you're basically pulling the chemical out.
Right.
And then you're sending it into a machine. In my case, most often I use something called a gas chromatograph.
Which I was going to guess that.
Okay.
Which separates, it's been a long time from chemistry class, but I was going to guess that.
Do you see? Yeah. So we separate the chemicals and a mass spectrometer. And that's something that actually break the chemical down in a way and look at what it is. So it gives you some idea of what the chemical might be. So it gives you something called mass spectrum of the chemical, the spectra, which are a little bit like fingerprints.
Yep.
Just like the chemical's fingerprint. And what is very cool is that it feels like learning a new language. So when you go in, you know, in the beginning, it's like all over the place and you don't know what you're doing. And then slowly you start to understand. And so these lines that the machine might produce that mean nothing to anybody else are suddenly like this language speaking to you and telling you what's in there.
That is cool. I do have to say that. That is cool.
Yeah. That is a very cool part of the job. So with so much pollution happening and all of these different things that you're studying, what are maybe the top one or two pollutants that are in the ocean right now? So that just so our listeners can hear that and then they can start having their own ideas on, and I'm sure we'll get to that later, on how we can help fix that. what are the worst pollutants right now?
So the worst thing that we are doing right now, undoubtedly, is global warming, right? Which is created by all the greenhouse gases that we emit. So when we burn fossil fuel, when we burn fuels, let's just say, right? You end up polluting the atmosphere in a way that traps heat. We as human beings have really altered what is going on with the atmosphere very quickly. And that is a scientific fact. People act as if it's not, but it is. So the climate has been getting warmer and warmer. And because of that, everything is now really unstable. And so some places may have a time when where you might say, oh, they're a little bit colder. Yes, that might happen. In some, but overall, we are making the world much warmer than it should be. And everything that I was told would happen in graduate school, knew would happen in graduate school, has and is happening. Mm. In fact, there's more than that happening, because when I was in graduate school, we did not expect or think about the ridiculous forest fires. That has just aggravated everything.
And that puts pollutants in the air, which then end up down in the ocean and so forth too, right?
Yes. But I mean, the worst thing is how fast we're making our temperature change. And that affects everything, right? So that affects the acidity of the oceans, if you will, the pH of the oceans. There's like so many feedback loops. There's so many things that change and are affected by what we're doing. And we need to change. We can never reverse what we've done. We've gone beyond that point, but it's like a snowball that is rolling downhill. Right. You can at least slow the pace. You can never stop it, maybe, but you can at least slow it down. Well, right? And hope that it will stop when it finally gets to some, we can try to see if it'll at least not roll all the way downhill. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. And I think that's an important thing. And the other thing, I want to go back a little bit and talk about your anthropogenic, did I say that right? Organic pollutants. See if I said that right. Because I was doing some little research before the show, and I was seeing that these can be found even in the deepest depths of the ocean. Is that true?
Yes. We've found all sorts of things, right? Yeah. And the thing, though, is also you can find, think about Antarctica.
Right.
No one's spraying pesticides because there are no lawns in Antarctica, right?
True.
And yet, exactly. Yet, the not so cool thing is that we've found pollutants there, right? So we've got pesticides in fish. You find that in the Arctic.
Wow.
Where I just spent my summer.
The Earth really is one interconnected whole. Yeah. Land, sea, air, people, plants, animals, and everything human beings have made. It really is all one big interconnected whole. How do we get our listeners to think about that more? To think about the interconnectedness of everything?
I think if you think about the whole world as your home, then I think you start to understand that if you pollute one corner of it, it is still your home and it's coming back to haunt you. You know what? I was just thinking.
I mean, I'm laughing, but that's not funny.
No, it is. But you know what? I was thinking, Jen, about what you had to go through. So now I don't know what you want to tell your listeners this, but Jen had her doggy poop inside the house all weekend. Okay. So when we pollute stuff, it's a bit like that, right? You're like doing something that is really stinky in one part, and that stink is not going to stay in that room. It's going to spread.
No, it didn't. No. To be fair, she's on medication. It wasn't her fault. We were out of town, but yes.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. But that is a very vivid picture to paint for our listeners, because believe me, when I walked into the house, the first thing I did was go, what is that smell? Right,
exactly.
And then we had to hunt it down because it wasn't like where you thought it would be, right? So yes, the smell permeates everywhere. So I guess that is a very vivid use of your senses to explain how pollution works. Very good, Dr. Podman. I like that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, well, I mean, we're laughing.
I really liked your explanation. Yeah, I really liked your explanation. On the show, I go by Galactic Space Geek, Jeff, because I'm the space guy. And as a space educator, both inside and outside the museum, we talk about, all the way back to Carl Sagan's, we talk about spaceship Earth all the time. And Earth is our home. And regardless of how much we talk about, we are eventually going to colonize somewhere else. This is it, ladies and gentlemen. This is all we got. We don't got a moon base. We certainly don't got Mars base. We got nothing else. We got to take care of this one.
Absolutely.
So that is...
Oh, sorry, Jeff. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you short. The thing that I wanted to say is I was so shocked when a young person told me, oh, yeah, so what? If we finish off with the Earth, we can go to Mars. And I thought, look at what we are saying. It is so ridiculous. We have gone from throwing away plastic bags to thinking that our whole Earth is disposable.
We can throw it away and go find Mars.
Well, let me tell you, that's not happening.
No. Well, not anytime soon, right? All right. We still have to figure
out. Well, even if we have a Mars. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to say, I mean.
And this is PhD Dr. Padma. We need to listen. So this is very fun show about a very serious topic that we've gotten into. How do you see kids? Because obviously, as an author, which we haven't gotten to yet, you have been around the world and you have been in front of thousands, probably tens of thousands of people, lots of which are children. How do you see the younger generation sort of taking to this message? Do you see a lot of them blowing it off, or do you see them sort of taking it to heart and really getting the message?
I think they are getting the message a whole lot more than us oldies. And I mean, honestly, I do.
I think
we are leaving them a heck of a mess. And I only think of it as, you know, a mess is also a challenge, and it's going to be their challenge. And frankly, it's going to be their challenge for survival. Because we've done so much to destroy this home of theirs that we're leaving them pretty much a ruin. And they've got to find out how to build it up. And I will tell you this, I think this is one of the reasons that I started writing books as well. We are not going anywhere if all we're going to do is think about our tiny room in the house and be like, this is good for my room. Well, too bad. You know what? You have to think about the whole house. And you only do that by becoming more compassionate. So I think one of the mistakes we've done in the United States is to say, oh, we're going to care only about what's happening to the United States, or not even that. And you have to think in a global way, because if you don't, it's a matter of our own survival. It's not like this is something removed from everywhere else. That pollution is coming right back to you. If you try to send it somewhere else, it's not going somewhere else.
Yeah, because we all know, we just talked about currents, right? It all comes back. So I do want to take a few moments, Dr. Padma, to talk about your amazing books and how you made the leap from scientist, who, my gosh, you have multiple degrees, to writing such amazing books. Do you try to include a little bit of science in your books, or maybe messages in your books for kids?
Sometimes there's a bit, at least in terms of the background. So my novel, Island's End, which was my second novel, is about a girl who is chosen to be the leader of the tribe. And the tribe was actually in a place that I worked when I was the only female on a team of scientists. And so and they were on these rainforests. It was so cool. They were on these rainforests that just came, you know, you would have rainforest up to the edge of the island, and then you would have coral reefs, and I could snorkel on them. It was so beautiful.
Oh, that is really neat.
It was so lovely, and it's so pristine. And one day I was walking along the beach, and it was gorgeous. And I saw something orange in the distance, and I thought, what a strange color. And as I got closer, I saw that it was a bottle of shampoo washed up all the way from Thailand, which is not that far away from the islands. But still, miles and miles. There were slippers. There was all sorts. So even there, like way removed from everything else, there's trash. This summer, I spent in the Faroe Islands, which are 62 degrees north at the edge of the Arctic Circle.
Oh, wow.
And they are not free of pollution.
Oh, well, that part's not cool. Being in the Faroe Islands sounds cool,
yes.
But finding pollution there, not so great.
No. But, you know, because of all of that, I think I was so tired of just doing research and finding out facts that human beings, adults, did not want to see. They just wanted to push it away based on their political beliefs, or for some reason they thought, because I'm of such and such religious belief, and I don't know, somebody tells me that I shouldn't do this or I shouldn't believe in that, I won't. And I was so sad and so tired of that. And I thought, like, I'm sick of researching and finding and discovering facts that no one wants to even look at.
Right.
I thought the other thing that I always love to do was write. And I think when you write, you can really touch someone's feelings.
Yes.
And I think sometimes just putting yourself in the character's shoes and another person's shoes for a little while helps you to just really understand where they're coming from. And I think the more we understand each other, the greater our likelihood that we will be compassionate. And to me, I think sometimes compassion is the key to, in a way, to solving global climate crisis.
To solving many things, I think.
Yes, yes.
That's the second time you've used that word. And, you know, we always talk to scientists and engineers on the podcast, and you don't hear the word compassion come out a lot in people's everyday jobs. But exactly as the two of you were just saying, how many problems we're talking about, solve it for kids and solving problems. Mm-hmm. How many problems could be solved with a little wedge of compassion added into the science or the engineering.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, with the Born Behind Bars, which is my latest novel, there is global climate crisis is the background.
Oh,
so
okay. Yeah.
The story plays out.
Okay.
Yeah, the story plays out against the backdrop of increased water scarcity, which is something else that happens as our climate changes, the water that we have, you know, and how much rainfall we have, where the rainfall comes, when the rainfall comes, all those things are so unpredictable that many places in southern India, where Born Behind Bars takes place, are experiencing water scarcity in ways they have never done before historically.
Oh.
So,
yeah, that's
so when that happens, you know, if you're fighting to get water, that is such a basic necessity. You can think about all the other things that happen. People can get violent, and there are basically sometimes, you know, water wars, if you like, or riots because of issues about sharing water that is coming from a river that everybody thinks they want the water. Nobody has enough, et cetera, et cetera. There'll be food shortages as well, right? And so many other things.
Yes.
But in Behind Bars, water scarcity plays a big role.
Well, that is definitely on my to-be-read list because I've read your books before. I think they're amazing. And we can talk to you forever, but we do ask all of our experts who come on the show to give us a challenge. So do you have a challenge for our listeners, Dr. Padma?
I do. I hope that all of you who are listening, whether you're adults or your kids, will think of, you know, whatever day it is of the week, wherever you are, every week, do at least one thing to reduce your carbon footprint, which means do one thing to lessen your contribution to global climate change. So do some research, find out little things that you can do, and do them. Make sure you start doing them once a week, and then maybe it'll be something that you start doing every day. And if each of us starts to think that way, I think hopefully we will start to change what's happening.
Yes.
And the other real challenge that I have for you is this. When you think of that, think about giving up. Think about changing the way you live. Think about doing something that doesn't leave you feeling as comfortable. So because sometimes we have to give up the comforts that we have, right? So it's like, well, maybe I like to drive all the way up to my school's front door when it is raining, but maybe I can actually take out an umbrella or wear a raincoat and walk, you know, a few steps. Right, if each of us starts to do that, climb the stairs, don't take the elevator. Maybe that takes you more time. Maybe you feel lazy. Maybe you don't want to do that, but do it. Start thinking of ways that you can do something, change the way that we live, because our lifestyles are causing part of the problem.
That's very true.
That is a terrific challenge, because everyone, as you started with, kid or adult, can absolutely take that to heart. And if they have listened to this entire episode, I can't imagine that they won't be taking that to heart. Thank you so much, Dr. Padma.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's been great having you on Solve It for Kids. Thanks so much, Dr. Padma.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure and an honor, and I love this. This is such a great conversation, such a great show. Best of luck to everyone who's listening, and best of luck to both of you with it in the future, too. Thank you. It was an honor to be here.
Thank you so much.
What a very fun conversation about a serious topic that is affecting our world. Huh, Jen?
Oh, I mean, Dr. Padma was great. You know, she definitely explained everything that's going on and why it's going on. And then kind of, I love her challenge at the end, right? Like, everybody just needs to see what they can do in their own little part, because you can get overwhelmed with the whole thing, but just start with your own little part.
That is just right. I loved her analogy of the house and her talking about what you can do individually, but then thinking about how, if we each do it individually, the multiplication effect of that across the world could have huge changes.
Yes, I think. And so hopefully our listeners will do the challenge, and you can always contact or tag us on our social media, which is at KidsSolve on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And please go look at our website, solveitforkids.com. We'll have more information about Dr. Padma and her amazing books, which don't forget to check out her website, which is padmavenkatraman.com. And you can learn about all these amazing books that she has written.
Absolutely. This is a challenge that we really want to know what it is that you have come up with to lower your carbon footprint or your families or your school communities. But this is something that we can't wait on, so we really need to get you to do it. Leave comments on our website. Leave comments on our social media, as Jen just said, at KidsSolve. And until next time, we are Jen and Jeff for Solve It for Kids!